Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Jaguars Today coming at you on this Thursday morning. A little rainy, a little drizzly. Tony, am I right that it's supposed to clear up this afternoon, or am I wrong about that?
I don't know at what point this afternoon. I know rain's supposed to roll through at least like the lunch hours. I don't know. Are you hoping to get out and play golf?
I don't. I'm on the fence. I brought the uniform, refer to a golf shirt as.
Temperature wise, it's as comfortable a day as we're going to have until November.
Yeah.
So if the sun does peek through, then yeah, I would get out.
I might play close to the homestead this afternoon. I don't know. I've got the golf shirt in the car, so I can do the Superman presto change-o quick change. I got a tee time with Fan Cam tomorrow. The First Coast Golf Tour continues, brother. I don't golfnow.com is not a sponsor, but if you're not using it, if you're a golfer, you're crazy. We're playing Hyde Park for $12. $12.
Nice. Yeah.
It's ridiculous the deals you get. Anyway, good morning, everybody. We're here to talk Jaguar football with you and not the collapse. Oh, it's one of those days you kind of wish you could talk about the NBA Finals. I suppose we could, but it's really not our go-to spot here on Jaguars today. Quite the collapse down the stretch for the Cleveland Cavaliers, but nonetheless, that's done. I saw Adam Silver last night. This was funny to me. At halftime, whoever was interviewing him said, "Are you afraid that parity is gone, that you're going to see these two teams match up for the next several years in the NBA Finals? What does that say about the rest of the league?" He goes, "Well, you're not giving enough credit to the rest of the league, because I'm sure players are watching this and their pride is swelling and they're going to redouble their efforts this offseason. So you're telling me they're only trying at 50% right now? Is that what you're telling
or
me?
Or they can try 200%.
Right. Could they try 200% next year? I mean, were they not trying hard this time around? It's so funny how many funny cliches.
New rule coming into the league. The Golden State Warriors start every game down 15 in the regular season.
Start the fourth quarter down 5.
Right.
You can pick your poison. You can play one quarter, you're up 5, or you're down 15, and they've got the full time to get in there. Quite the juggernaut at the moment. Anyway, good morning, everybody. All right, let's switch it over to your Jacksonville Jaguars. Tyler Devitt inspired us today to play junior GM. We just had the GM in here a moment ago. I'm just chatting up Dave Caldwell. He looks like he's fit, Tony. He looks like he's been working out. But Dave Caldwell seemed like he was in a pretty good mood. We'll see how they feel next week at mandatory minicamp for the veterans. We know all the big storylines. We've talked about them a bunch. Looking ahead to next week, going to kind of look back, but only in a concentrated time frame here. You know, you and I sit here the way you positioned it about the guard spot, that if Brandon Linder has to switch out because they don't feel like they've got the right caliber of player to play guard and leave Linder at center, which we still think is a more important position. I think even Doug Marrone thinks it's probably a slightly more important position, even though he kind of lumped it in with the guards last Friday, that you feel like that's a miss for the Jags for not going out there and using that cap space, which is still around $49 million, and spending $10 million or thereabouts and getting one of the premium guards that was available on the market.
Absolutely, yes.
So that's a move that you would go back and make, I think, given the opportunity to do that right now. So that's what we're asking you to do, kind of go retroactive. Just this offseason, though, since the end of the season, I'm sure there are things you would have liked to have seen the Jaguars do in terms of team building, and maybe some that you kind of scratch your head and say, why did they do it that way? Why did they go after this particular player? Why didn't they go after this guy? Why did they spend this much money on this aging veteran? Whatever the case may be, they didn't sign too many aging veterans. But, you know, they certainly signed some older guys this round of free agency than they have under Dave Caldwell in the past.
Yes.
Without question. So we're asking you today to put on the GM cap, and I've got it condensed into Twitter as best I can on here. And we ask you, what's the one off-season move you would have made for the Jags, obviously, that they didn't make, such as maybe it's going out and throwing whatever it takes to get Kevin Zeitler to come in here and play guard, for instance. Could be a quarterback, right? But be specific. If you just say upgrade the quarterback position, find another quarterback, bring a competition, who did you like to bring in that was available?
Right.
Right? And also, on the other side, what's a move that they did make that you're not on board with, at least as of right now, and you have the benefit of hindsight. So one positive or one proactive thing that they didn't do, and one thing that you say, you know what, maybe we would have been better off if we hadn't gone that direction. So we'll get into that today throughout the course of the show as well. You can always hit us up on social media at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. We'll get the phone lines rolling a little while at 641-1010 and the text line as well. I'm not going to belabor what we discussed yesterday. I think we set our piece in discussing media access with Ryan O'Howard. I know all the other shows, or a lot of the shows, have weighed in on that over the course of the last 24 hours. But, you know, if you're curious, I really don't have anything to add to the comments I made to it yesterday. I made my position clear. I think Ryan did, and he's entitled to it. You know what I mean? I respect Ryan in that he is not afraid to take the unpopular opinion.
That's very true.
Right? And I don't think he does it for the sake of doing it.
Yeah, I don't think he does it so that he can be unpopular. I think he really does feel that way about it.
Yeah, right. And maybe he's a little more willing to be critical. Look, as I said yesterday, there is a segment of the audience, and we get feedback. And we only get feedback probably from a small slice that's out there. You know, and we see the same Twitter handles, maybe 30 or 40 Twitter folks tweeting at us constantly. Same with Facebook posts. So it's not necessarily a representative sample, but you get a percentage that swear that we're never critical of the team. We're absolutely homered up 100%. To me, being a homer is not wishing for the success of the home team. As long as you are realistic in your description and analysis of what they're doing, I think it's okay to want the home team to win. At least, and if that makes me a homer, I'm okay with that. I'll own that label. But I do feel like we're critical of the team when we see them doing something that we don't agree with, okay? But there's a percentage of fans out there as well that we've heard from that say, man, all you guys do every day is bash Blake. That's all you do. You kill the Jags. Never say anything good about him. So it's somewhere in the middle.
We'll get that, and then the next person will say, when are you guys going to start talking about the quarterback and that he needs to get out of town? Like,
it depends on the individual that's listening.
And you can't satisfy everybody.
Right. You can't program to the loudest voice on the text line.
I can't be as mad as the maddest fan out there.
I'm not as mad as the maddest fan out there. Right.
Right, because I'm not. And I'm not as, you know, bullish on this team as the fan who thinks they're going to win 10 games. I'm just not.
I told you the other night at the AHEPA scholarship dinner that I was honored to speak at. It was great. I could not believe how many folks who are, you know, business leaders, whatever, just Jaguar fans in the room that were just looking for 6 wins. Just give me 6 wins. How can you do? I told, do not settle for that.
No.
It's not good enough. Yes, I get it. It's a doubling of the win total. If you won 1 last year, would you settle for 2 this year? Probably not.
Yeah. And maybe it's easy to say in June that just double the win total. I think in December, you'd be sitting there going, another wasted season.
But there are those people. And you know what? If that's the way they enjoy their football, you know, there are a lot of people who are casual in the offseason. They kind of back off a little bit. And then they get ramped back up, and it's about the fellowship of game day and hanging out. However you want to consume
totally
it, man.
Fine.
You know what? There's a broad spectrum out there. I think we do get a slice of the most hardcore fans in Jacksonville and beyond that listen to this program on a regular basis, just based on the feedback that we get on social media. But, again, this is as much as I want to belabor the whole issue right now. If you want to hear what we're talking about, if you missed the show, you can go back and listen at 1010XL.com in the on-demand section. It's all out there for you. Tyler, by the way, we were talking about this yesterday, had a big show meeting. When's the last time we had a show meeting?
It's been a while.
We all went to lunch like 9 months ago, I think. Something like that. We all had a sandwich 9 months ago, and we probably dished on everyone other than everyone sitting at the table. If that counts as a show meeting, that's fine. Tyler, what's the best way for folks to get the podcast of the program?
Best way, if you're on iPhone, go to the podcast app and search 1010XL. You'll see all of the 1010XL content under there, under that umbrella. If you're on Android, SoundCloud, you can download the SoundCloud app, and that'll download the program every day. You can go on onto 1010XL.com and see Jaguars Today on the on-demand section, so you can get it on your phone. You could stream us, or you could download it onto your phone.
All right. We say that because still there are people that from time to time ask us how come they're not available on Jaguars.com. That's a team decision. You know, they only did it out of a courtesy to us. It wasn't like anything contractually obligated or guaranteed or promised or whatever. So they ran it there. It's still available in plenty of locales. So we're happy to direct you to 1010XL.com.
The best thing to do is probably go to the podcast app, search 1010XL, and just subscribe to our stuff so that way you get all of the 1010XL podcast without having to download it. It'll do it for you.
You should do something called Tyler's Hot Takes and do like 90 seconds of hot takes on a like a semi-weekly basis, something like that. I think that would be something that I'd be interested in downloading. You could give us all the behind-the-scenes hot takes from the drill in the morning, the politics between Beef and Prosser, how close they come to fisticuffs on the breaks and
things
like that.
It would allow them to talk hoops for 90 seconds.
Exactly.
A week, you know? I know he's more of a hoops guy.
He is a hoops guy. Tyler, your thoughts on the way?
I think you just made me some money. I could sell that and I can make some money.
Why not?
Thank you. Thank you, Mike.
Tyler's Hot Takes, right? And you got to spell takes. How do you have to spell
T-A-E-K-S? Correct.
Yeah, T-A-E-K-S. Why do they do that? Is that just to try to be ironic?
I don't get it. It's an internet culture thing. I don't really understand it.
It really is an internet culture thing.
The kids do it nowadays, Mike.
The kids. Tyler Devitt. For the first time, has just referred to the kids, as far as I know, at least. All right, speaking of the kids, we've got John Osier coming up from Jaguars.com right on the other side of our first time out here. Hayes Carline didn't do enough damage to the airwaves this morning that he's going to stop by at about 10:35 and give us a preview of what to expect or what he anticipates that'll get done over the last couple of days of OTAs. Tell us, because you can't see it. You're going to have to guess out there, aren't you, Hayes? And we'll have some of the interview from Rashad Green yesterday with the Midday Chalk here, a few sound bites from him as well. As, you know, I think the perception is this guy's going to be fighting for a roster spot this offseason, Tony. I do think the Brian Walters injury has to help his chances, without question. But if it comes down to making this team, it could come down to punt return. Who wins the job?
If you're going to ask me right now if Rashad Green's on the roster, I'd say no. That's my gut feeling right now. I think Aurelius Ben gives you enough in special teams as far as coverage that he's probably still on the team, and D.D. Westbrook can be the punt returner. And if he can't do it, then Marquise Lee might be able to do it for you. I don't see Green helping you in the passing game right now at all. So if you ask me right now, I'd say he's not on the team.
Well, that's the thing. If you don't, he's not going to be on coverage teams. He's not big enough, I don't think, to play coverage on special teams. So if you think he can contribute in the punt return game, they have Marquise Lee. They have a lot of options still, even outside of Rashad Green. It depends on the numbers. You say no. I'm going to say yes for right now, just to disagree with you, because I do think the Walters injury makes things a little bit more interesting.
I think it helps him.
Yeah, in the numbers game.
But I don't think it helps him enough. I think Dee's going to be the punt returner.
Well, if he is, then there's great likelihood that you're right about Rashad Green. I still think he has a chance to win that job.
As if we have any idea who's returning punts right now.
No. Yeah. I saw somebody returning punts when I walked out to practice the other day, but I'm not going to say who.
It wasn't Dee Dee, because he wasn't
practicing. It was not Dee Dee. I guarantee it wasn't Dee Dee.
John Osher?
It was not Osher, and it was not Hacker, who once... They did the media. What was it? The media.
It was a media. I don't remember.
Not a decathlon, but kind of like a, you know, like
combine.
Combine superstars slash. Yeah. You know, I say that in heavy quotes. Superstars competition.
He took one right off the schnoz.
Off the schnoz, the punt return, and unfortunately, it's not committed to video, at least as far as we know. All right, we'll take a time out here. Come back with the senior writer from Jaguars.com, John Osier, will be in studio. By the way, when you walked in, didn't the studio look awesome this morning with the backdrops all lit up like that? I'm going to tweet out a picture just of how nice our working environment is. So check that out and tell us, what is the one move you'd like to go back and make for the Jags that they didn't make this offseason? What's one move that they did make that maybe you'd say, you know what, in hindsight, I wouldn't have done that? Give us your thoughts on that on social media. It's the question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Live at EverBank on 1010XL.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
Jaguars Today, live here at EverBank. What are you whispering about over there, Osher? See, that's what happens when you don't have a headset on. You whisper.
What's that?
You know, I don't know. You were whispering something over there a minute ago. I thought we caught that on a hot mic.
No, Tony mentioned that we can't mention how Blake looks in practice. I said we can.
We can mention it?
Yeah. I thought he looked okay.
Okay.
Looks about the same in the uniform.
I thought he hasn't looked good at times. I've said that. I thought there's been stretches where, in the two that we can talk about, which is last two Fridays, I thought he had a good stretch. I thought he had a bad stretch.
Yeah, I think, look, you can – I think in general, like I said, hey, Marquise Lee caught my eye and made some nice plays
right.
when I've seen him out there. I think what they don't want you doing is saying
right, – we can't say that he went 18 for 19.
Let me tell you.
Or they're running trips left with this guy in the slot and talking about –
Which they're not, by the way.
Maybe they went to the wishbone,
it really caught me off guard.
I was surprised to see so much wishbone. I really was.
Didn't think they'd be able to get Yeldon, Ivory, and Fournette on the field at the same time.
It's something. And
darn it, they have.
It was a problem. They
to have Blake playing defensive end was a shock to me.
See, now, when that happens, no, I'm kidding, right. in a regular season game, we're talking about, I'm putting you on the spot here, but your wisdom, John, looking back at the offseason, whether it's looking at a hole that you still are not comfortable with or an area on the team that you would have liked to have seen addressed in a different way, what's a move that you would have made that this team didn't make? And conversely, if there's a move maybe that they did make that you might not have personally made, what would you say?
You know, I wish that there had been, sometime in the last two seasons, a quote-unquote veteran edge rusher that can slam the door late in the game. I don't know that there's that many out there. Yeah, I mean, so if – you're asking who I would have gone after this offseason in that capacity. I think they did as good as they could, meaning going after Calais Campbell, who I think they hope can help create that on the defensive line. I don't know if he's that guy that I'm
right.
talking about.
Yeah, I think you're thinking like the Dwight Freeney move with Atlanta last year, something along those lines.
Yeah, but again, I think sometimes the door is shut on those kind of things. I haven't talked to Dwight in a long time, but my
impression of
Dwight.
I'm not talking about him specifically, just that type of
that
thing.
Guy,
right.
That veteran edge rusher, and I have heard this is the case with Freeney, wants to play for a certain level of team that he's going to the Super Bowl.
No question.
That veteran thing.
No question.
So, but yeah, I mean, if Von Miller had been out there, I think that'd have been a good move.
Well, right. So, I mean, from the standpoint then of
that's
a
my
move
point.
You'd
I think
like
that's
seen them
still
made,
the hole.
Do you think that move was out there to make then?
Not particularly, no.
See, that's the thing. I don't know if it was either, right?
But I do think, and Tony and I've talked on and off the air about this, boy, that pass rush is what I still wonder about. Not numbers of sacks, but big moment pass rushing. To me, I think that's second only to Blake Bortles in terms of where is it going to come from. Because I think that's the thing that, when you think about this defense, nobody looked at this defense last year and thought, boy, it's the number six defense in the league, although that's where it ranked. I think the slam the door into the game pass rush is why it didn't feel like that, because that's where you get turnovers. That's where you get all the stuff that wasn't there.
All right. On the other side, is there something that maybe it's a draft pick, maybe you would have gone a different direction in a certain round in the draft, or just, you know, is there something you would
with the
not
offensive
have done?
Line, you know, it. You want the offensive line to be better. And really, if Albert and Robinson are both starters, which I think they will be, and are both of the impact that they think, then they've drafted or addressed 40% of the offensive line. So could they have done one more thing on the offensive line? I probably would have, but that's where, again, one of the huge themes is, can Parnell that combination or whatever becomes that combination, is it as good as they seem to think? And I think that's a huge question going into the season, a huge topic.
Do you think that they seem to think – I mean, the move of Linder, and I understand what Doug Marrone was talking about last week with, you know, what's the best combination of two players, but the fact that there were some – pretty big name accomplished guards on mm-hmm. the market that you knew if you had signed one of them, you're plug and play in those guys.
Right.
Is that something in hindsight that maybe because they're right now still kind of trying to figure out what's the best use of Linder, was that something that would have just
I don't think
simplified
so because
everything?
I think the way it's going to wind up, I think Linder's going to wind up playing center. And I think you're going to have Parnell, Can, Robinson, a Linder, and Albert starting. I don't know which guard will start
right.
where.
And if it's like that, then they have upgraded the offensive line.
Yeah,
to me.
And I take everything that happens in OTAs with a grain of salt because I think, you know, ideally they would do experimenting behind closed doors. Well, there's really no closed door to get behind in the NFL. So this is the time that it's the lowest profile where they can go out. There's no pads on. Let's sort of get some scenarios that we can have play out in training camp if need be. But I may wind up with egg on my face, which I have before, but I just think Linder winds up starting at guard and the other two guys, I mean, at center, and the other guys start at guard, and you've got Albert at left tackle. When the thing gets going, that's what you're going to do.
It's interesting because you're looking for more edge rush. And I think the team obviously is hoping that Ngakoue and Fowler continue to develop and,
sure.
and that Calais gives you some. His presence may open things up, you know, from the middle for guys on the edge at times mm-hmm. and his own pass rush. So they go out and they draft a guy like Dwan Smoot, right? But at the same time, I can't help but thinking, would that have been the spot to do you grab Dan Feeney? Do you grab
right.
one of those guards that was thought of as a top 45 prospect? That's
yeah.
a problem. You can't have everything, right?
Right.
You're limited resources, and that's why I think Tony has been really on the – you had guards. You knew that could play.
Yeah.
You'd seen them at the NFL level. You got cap space. I do think they're holding
that's
back –
that's their decision.
You think they're holding back some of this cap space to get guys done this year?
I think they have to be. And I think they looked at it, and I think they legitimately – tried to scout, and based on what they believe, I think if there had been somebody they thought was a significant upgrade out there, they spent. You know, they're not shy about spending. But I do think you have to, when you've got these fourth-year guys that you think, you know, I think Linder, Telvin, all the guys we talked about can be part of the core. I think you're going to sign some wide receivers, some big money out of this bunch. I don't know about two, but, you know, so you're going to be paying some money somewhere. So, yeah, you got to see. I don't know if you have to set a whole lot of it back, but you also don't want to get in a situation where you spend foolishly now and then it sort of backs up on you even in a year or two. So I get why they're trying to be smart.
2 years from now, just put on your prognosticator hat. Out of the top three receivers that have been here for a while, we know who they are, which one is most likely not here? If it could be that they're all here, we understand that. But if it's only two, which are the two?
Again, this obviously huge thing we don't know is how this season plays out.
Of course not, but that's why it's a projection.
I think Hearns will be the one not here.
I do too.
And or back at a different contract than he's on
right.
in this two, you know. He's on this 2 year. I just think if Marquise Lee plays 14 or 15 games, which, you know, that means he's pretty healthy in a normal NFL season and ascends like he looked like he was ascending, then I think it's hard not to go with Lee and Robinson because those two guys both have a chance to be special.
And unlike if they all were draft picks in the same year and they're all coming up and eligible for their first, second contract of their careers, Allen Hurns will have made 2 years of big money,
mm-hmm.
you know, pretty big money
right.
last year and this season. And so maybe he'll like the direction things are going
right.
if they, you know, and this is pure speculation, right? And just maybe they come to him and say, hey, you know what? We can't tie up this much money. We would like to have you. We'd like to have you for half the price.
Right.
You know,
now, I do also say that both, you know, Robinson and Lee both still have some proving to do in terms of, A-Rob was hurt somewhat by Blake last year, but he also had drops.
He did. But he's also flashed Pro Bowl potential.
He has, but I don't know that he has flashed enough to be paid on the open market like a one based on 1 year. That's a tough thing.
I think Allen Robinson would get a pretty sizable deal.
But I think this year is important for that. I don't think you want to go on the open market with 2 years. He wasn't bad last year, but it wasn't Pro Bowl level. It wasn't 2015. You don't want to have two 2016s in a row going on the open market because he won't get paid like he should if that's the case.
And it's a bit of a show
I think he's
game.
A big-time player,
yeah.
but he hasn't shown that consistently enough. Maybe not through fault of his own.
And it's a bit of a shell game for the Jags because they only have him under control for one more year about making the decision, do we push this in the next offseason where, yeah, for a few months we would be the team that can negotiate exclusively
right.
with Allen Robinson, but then we're talking about free agency, it's 2 months away, And if he does have another big year, do we want to deal with, you know, that shadow looming over it, or just get it done now?
Yeah, deals like that, those can get done as the season goes on. If it's clear that both of those guys under this system, these coaches, all this, if that's the direction, you know, you can. When we ask players about it during the season, they'll all say, "I'm not talking about that at the end of the season." If the team goes to him and gives him a really good deal, they might talk about it a little
right.
bit.
I'm looking at Alshon Jeffrey, what he got, because it's fairly comparable. He's had some injury things that have kept him from being full speed the last couple of years. He got a one-year deal. That's all he got on the market. So the market was not great for wide receivers this year. He got $9.5 million, basically, for 1 year, which is kind of Allen Hurns' money. I think Allen Robinson's going to want and anticipate a four-year deal up north of that number.
I agree.
Average.
And again, I think he's going to wind up being a big-time player for a long time. And I don't think there's sort of perception that he absolutely fell off the map last year. He had okay year. But I think he would like to have more than two consecutive okay years going into free agency. I think you would a lot rather have that 2015 something closer.
Right, because I think a lot of his lack of production was on Blake, but as you said, he had drops. And if he can clean up his areas, you know, that he catches a higher percentage of the balls that are in his that he's targeted by. He comes down with the contested balls better, much like he did 2 years ago.
Right.
And then, you know, what are you going to do with if the quarterback's inaccurate? You're not going to hold that against him. I think he'll end up making some pretty good cake.
And to me, everybody's listened to me over the years knows how I feel about Marquise Lee's ability. I think he's the, outside of Bortles, the most fascinating story on the team this year, because he showed there were times last year where you looked at him and went, whoa, this is, I see why he was a Blitnikoff guy. I see why he put up 1,700 at SC 1 year. Can he turn into that big time player that everybody thinks of as elite? He's got it, hasn't done it yet. Is this the year that he does that? If it is, that's something special. That's something you may not want to let get out the door.
Practice open to the media here at the top of the hour. What are you be writing about over the next few days in anticipation of minicamp?
We'll have Mercedes Lewis on Ozone Live on Facebook this afternoon. So I'm looking forward to that. I always like talking to Mercedes. He's the one guy who's been around here longer than I have. And then I believe Clayus Campbell will talk after practice. I think that's the schedule. Obviously, with his status on the team, I want to get his thoughts on where OTAs are.
All right. We'll look for you at Jaguars.com, and thanks for stopping in.
All right, buddy.
We'll see you,
pal. I'll see you.
There goes John Oger, everybody, right here on Jaguars Today. Hayes Carline in the on-deck circle, warming up, swinging that weighted bat over there, Tony. I don't know, who's put on more muscle this offseason? Is it Marquise Lee or Hayes Carline? It's tough call.
I'd probably still go Marquise.
I see them both walking down the hallway, and I'm like, are they twins? I'm really not sure how that whole thing works. All right, we'll come back with Hayes, get his thoughts as I guess for the second Thursday in a row, he's all over 1010XL in the mornings. And once again, co-hosting and doing a great job with Jeff Prosser on the drill this morning. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank on 1010XL. It's Jaguars Today. Hey, folks, Mike Dempsey here for my friends at Dandy Sandwiches and Subs. Over 60 years in the business, they have a pretty good formula going. Fresh ingredients, great variety, and a price point that puts a smile on your face. And always their sandwiches delivered fresh to your locales like Circle K, Kangaroo Express, and Gate all across the First Coast. And right now, for the month of June, at Circle K, the sandwich of the month, the ultimate Italian, the June sandwich of the month, capicola ham, Genoa salami, pepperoni, mozzarella on a Parmesan roll. You can get that for $3.99. That's available only at Circle K, at least at that deal. Other great items out there that they've added to the menu this year include the Boom Boom Chicken. It was new in April, and it's still going strong. All white meat chicken strips, Boom Boom sauce, pepper jack cheese on a locally fresh-baked Parmesan sub roll. The old school ham and cheese twists, the Santa Fe turkey wraps are out there. And if you're really hungry, try a city block cheeseburger. So many to choose from. That's your toughest call. Whenever you're hungry for food on the go, go out and make yours a Dandy and do it today.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we've got the Hayes Carline, 1010XL. I'm still getting used to saying that. I know he's been with us for a good long while now. What, beginning of the year, right?
That's right.
It's like 6 months or something, but I still want to say Florida Times Union, formerly of the Florida Times Union, and now GridironNow.com, as well as 1010XL. Good morning. How are you?
Doing great. How are you guys?
You had a busy morning, huh?
Yeah.
Got all your LeBron talk out of the way?
We did.
It was one of those days I'm itching to talk a little NBA, but, you know, didn't really fit the genre here.
Yeah. What'd you guys think of Stoopsy? That was, like, surprising, wasn't
it? I guess so. You know, especially the time of year that it happened and all that. I guess from that standpoint, if you're Oklahoma, at least you solidify your recruiting class. You know, you can elevate a guy on the staff if he works out. I don't know if they're going to – they've announced who that's going to be. I'm sure they know who it's going to be. But, you know, he's I think he's probably a little overrated, honestly. He's a very good coach. I think people had him as one of the two or three best in the country for a long period of time. And, you know, whatever. It's an argument. Maybe he's top 10, top 12. And if you're that, if you're 12th, maybe you're third some years.
I honestly thought about it more from the perspective of a 33-year-old now being handed the keys to the program at Oklahoma.
Is that who got it? Was it a 33-year-old assistant?
Yeah, Riley. And he was the offensive coordinator, and obviously their offense has been unreal. I'm looking forward to talking to David Garrard again because he was at East Carolina before he went to Oklahoma, and Garrard obviously follows that program really closely, so we'll talk to him about that later in the summer. But, you know, as a 33-year-old myself, I was like, Oklahoma. Like, being the head coach at Oklahoma, like, I couldn't even wrap my head around that, to be that young and be handed that program.
Yeah, it's amazing. It'll be interesting to see how he fares, for sure. He's got a team that, you know, certainly a lot of people think can be in the playoffs, so see what they can do.
Yeah, we will do that, and we'll see what you get to see for what little you can today and tomorrow as OTAs draw to a close over the next couple of days. Same thing we asked John Osier. I'll put you on the spot here. We're asking folks today, what's something, when you look back at what the Jags have done this offseason, what's a move that they didn't do that you would have done? Maybe it's sign a particular guy or aggressively go after a particular guy in free agency, for instance. And what's something that they did do that maybe you wouldn't have done and you would have done something a little bit differently?
Great questions. And I thought about this on the drive over after you threw it out there.
Because you're a pro.
I try. The first thing that popped into my head, and I don't know how much it would have greatly affected the success this year, but I would have brought in a different backup quarterback for Blake. I would have, you know, said, but, you know, let Henny go.
Is there a specific guy you would have tried to get?
The first guy before the market opened that I thought of was a Brian Hoyer, but I didn't know that San Francisco would sign him to a contract where it was a, you know, hey, we think you could be our starter.
You know, Hoyer's completion percentage, I think I read yesterday, was something like 67%. He was sneaky good last year in Chicago.
And I think he's the kind of guy, like, Chad Henne is a smart player and has a veteran savvy for sure, but my guess is whatever he knows, he's passed on to Blake at this point. So my thing would be, you know, I mean, obviously the main thing is if Blake struggles, then you have a viable option to maybe save your season, but also just bring in a new veteran. Just maybe he's got something he can help Blake with that isn't there, that Blake hasn't been exposed to yet. So, again, I don't know how much success that would have directly had on this coming
fall. Well, okay,
but
that's fine.
But,
you know,
perhaps.
So, all right, so that's a move that you would have made. What's something that they did do? Maybe drafted a certain guy and maybe someone else is available or, you know, you – I don't know. It could be anything. But what's something that they did that you think – well, I'm not quite sure how that's going to work out.
Yeah, probably the biggest one for me would be the third-round pick of DeJuan Smoot. That would have been one for me that, you know, maybe you would dress the interior of the offensive line there. Even with Cam Robinson in the second round, maybe go ahead and add. There was so many guys on the board, and I don't have it in front of me now, but I think Feeney was
available. Dan Feeney was the big
point.
One, I think.
Yeah.
He was sitting there.
So, I mean, and again, we don't know what they thought of him, but he went fairly soon after that, I think,
he
in
did.
The next, you know, handful of picks. So certainly there was somebody who thought that he was worthy of being selected right there, and there was, you know, some analysts that believed, you know, he would be, you know, a high second-round pick. So that would be one that you look at and say, okay, well, do I need to – I get they need some depth at the strong side end spot behind Calais, but, you know, from my vantage point, maybe you go ahead and take a guy in the third round that you hope can be an upgrade at one of those interior, you know, either guard spot and, you know, and go from there.
Look, there are countless examples around the NFL of guys who, when teams draft them, you're like, why, you know, what? And then they turn out to be outstanding players. So this is not a shot at DeJuan Smoot,
sure.
who
–
going into last year was really highly ranked on a lot of charts out there. But, you know, you had the hotter guy name-wise during the draft was Jordan Willis, who ended up going to Cincinnati. And so you go that direction and you opt to go this way instead of that way. Do you think it speaks at all to what they, I don't know if expect, but that may be strong, but certainly hope to get out of Fowler this year, another year further removed from injury and the continued growth of Unique Ngakoue?
Yeah, I think that's really going to be the key to the defense to me. I think the defense has the potential to be elite, but you have to have an elite edge rusher, I think, to be an elite defense in the present day NFL. So you look at Ngakoue, 8 sacks as a rookie, that's outstanding. If he can take, they don't have to both take huge steps, but if Ngakoue can jump to 15 sacks, then great.
That's a pretty big step.
It's a huge step. You have that. Fowler, it's interesting because you don't want to give up on him yet, because you look at the sack numbers for J.J. Watt as a rookie, Khalil Mack as a rookie, Vic Beasley. Those guys made massive leaps in their second year. I think Watt went from 4 to 20.5. Khalil Mack was right in that 4-5 range, went to 15.5. And then we saw Beasley last year lead the league after a fairly nondescript rookie year. And again, it's Fowler's, technically it's his third year, but it's really his second. So can he make that kind of quantum leap that we've seen edge rushers make in recent years around the league, particularly with that sort of a draft, you know, stock, Mack, Watt, Beasley, all drafted in the first half of the first round. But that's going to be the key. If Fowler or Ngakoue can become that guy that an offense has to game plan around as far as how they're going to handle blocking him, everything else is in place. You're not going to be able to throw on this team on the perimeter with Ramsey and Boye. I think the safeties are going to look better than probably what they really are because of those two guys. I think Miles Jack will be sensational at the middle spot, particularly in coverage, once he gets the scheme down, which he still has plenty of time to do. And then you look at what Calais and Malik bring in the interior on passing situations. It's all in place, but one of those two has got to become, and I guess they could each take a small jump and each get to like 9 sacks, and then you're looking at, okay, 18 sacks.
Yeah, maybe.
That'd be good. But I think ideally you'd like to see one of them become a guy who's got to be sort of the focus of the opposing offensive coordinator in terms of how he builds a game.
Yeah, because if you've got Malik Jackson and Calais Campbell coming up the middle, and you've got a guy that by the second month of the season is making defensive coordinators take notice coming off the edge, then you're creating problems because you're picking your poison a little bit. A couple of things. One, when you talk about, I don't remember how good of a pass rusher Khalil Mack was in college. I know he was just considered an all-around great linebacker. J.J. Watt, I think, even though he's highly regarded, shocked everybody at how good he was. But Vic Beasley is a much more natural pass rusher than Fowler. Not natural like he was born that way, but as coming into the league, a greater variety of moves and things like that. That's one of the critical things for Fowler this offseason. We can't be talking about he needs to develop pass rush moves. When it's like Doug Marrone said last Friday kind of about Blake Bortles. If we're talking about footwork and all these things come August, we're in trouble, basically. And I'm paraphrasing. I think it's the same with Dante. If we're talking about his need to develop moves, you're not going to develop too many during the course of the season. Now's the time to get that work done.
Yeah, I agree. And it will be fascinating to see how Dante fares when they go against New England for those joint practices and Tampa Bay as well. But that'll be really the litmus test for Dante. And he's athletic enough that he doesn't have to become the most savviest pass rusher in the NFL. I mean, that would be a great goal to aspire to. But he just needs to have some idea of a plan. I mean, try to set up an offensive tackle, hold something for one play to bring it out, you know, two plays down the road, and basically sort of what I've, you know, what kind of the word has been in the locker room over the past years, don't play checkers, play chess. And if he can start to figure that out, then yeah, I mean, he obviously has the potential with his power. I think his power more than his agility to become a dynamic pass rusher in this league.
Now, you talked about you expect Miles Jack to be exceptional this year, it sounds like, and let's hope that's the case. Do you think Paul Posluszny, we talk about how at times he has been underwhelming in coverage, although he had a pretty good year last year. You look back over his career, he's in the top 5 all-time interceptions for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Is there a chance We've seen nickel packages. Pazluzzi slides to the middle, and Miles Jack stays on the field at the expense of Telvin Smith.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I don't think that will happen, but I'm sure that that's a rotation that they will work through in training camp to really get a look at it. But I like Telvin in coverage. I like him in the nickel, so I wouldn't take him out. And you're right, Pazluzzi does have impressive interception totals, but I think it's the larger scope of plays given up. So he is apt to, you know, intercept a couple of balls a year for you, which at that spot is quality. But to me, it's the plays that you are going to give up that maybe you're not going to give up now with Miles Jack and Telvin Smith. It may not be them getting interceptions, but it may be the quarterback looking to them and not seeing any room to throw the ball.
Are you doing the full marathon today? Are you back this afternoon at 3 o'clock?
I am doing the full
marathon.
You're
a beast, man. You are just,
I'm doing the car wash at a company I work for.
Right? For the second week in a row. Can you confirm or deny, did Hacker say that the Golden State Warriors were going to let Cleveland get one yesterday? Just basically like
he predicted that Cleveland would beat Golden State. But it wasn't that he – I don't think it was that he thought Golden State would let them win, just that Cleveland would sort of
Maybe I was misunderstanding some of the reaction I saw on social media to that. I don't know.
Yeah, but that one last night pretty much killed all the NBA's fixed guys out there.
That's right?
It was fixed. It would have been fixed last night.
Right. They would have won that game and at least gone back to Golden State tied up at 2 apiece. So
yeah, the fouls were pretty even. So yeah, Golden State just pulled it out and Cleveland sort of choked.
They sort of did. Absolutely
and by
right.
By Cleveland, you mean LeBron?
Yeah. And Kyrie?
Yeah.
And all of them. Fell apart.
Outscored 11-0 down the final few minutes.
On your home court,
right? They're up. I want to say they're up 6 with about a minute and a half. Because I think Golden State. I was flipping at that point. It shows you how much I care who really wins this. Because Fargo. I missed Fargo at 10 o'clock so I could watch a game, but it replayed at 11:10, and I had to see Fargo. I'm sorry. I got to be honest with you. I caught the final few minutes via commercial breaks over on the NBA Finals. All right, Hayes Carline, go knock him dead. Get out there and take roll, please, at Jaguar practice, and we'll see you out there at minicamp next week, buddy.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys. Appreciate
all right,
it.
You got it. Hayes Carline, the marathon man here on 1010XL, sitting in for the full show on the drill this morning. He'll be back with the crew on the Frangie Show this afternoon with Brent Martineau and Lauren Brooks. Is Hacker in today as well?
I believe he is. So
I expect a full breakdown of the World Cup qualifier tonight against Trinidad and Tobago.
Sure, that's coming along. All right, there he goes. Hayes Carline out the door. This Dayton football and the Honda drive around the NFL straight ahead on Jaguars today right here on 1010XL. Hey, best kept secret in town for tires is no longer a secret because we're letting it loose. Tire Outlet and TireOutlet.com. Download that app to your phone. You might never need it, and that would be great. But if you do, if you're stuck roadside, imagine right now in the drizzly weather, you want to get things taken care of quickly. Tire Outlet can have a fresh set of tires, any maker, model, whatever you choose, delivered to the retail location of your choice, usually in less than an hour. Over 300,000 tires in the local inventory. Wholesale pricing, premium service. It's the formula that makes TireOutlet.com the place to go for tires.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history presented all week long by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. We told you earlier this week that the NFL and the AFL voted back in 1966 on, I think it was Monday, that Monday's date that they would merge eventually. It was on this date in 1966 that they announced plans to form the NFC and AFC conferences and shuffle the teams, not as we currently see them, but certainly some of the NFL teams coming over to the AFC side of things and creating new divisional rivalries. Tony, some amazing performers and individuals were born on this date. Starting and takes a backseat to no one, we talked about Byron Wizard White, maybe only along with Alan Page, being the two most prolific post-NFL career guys that ever played in the National Football League. Byron White was the fourth pick in the 1938 NFL draft by the Pittsburgh Steelers. Led the league in rushing twice, but only played 3 seasons because he quit the league in 1942 to join the Navy. During World War II, he served as an intelligence officer in the Navy, stationed in the Pacific. He had originally wanted to join the Marines. He was kept out because he was colorblind. However, he ended up writing the intelligence report on the sinking of future President John F. Kennedy's PT-109, and he was awarded 2 Bronze Star medals, discharged as a lieutenant commander. Practiced law for 15 years. and was Kennedy's campaign manager in Colorado for the 1960 presidential run. Obviously, that was successful. Kennedy ends up appointing him to the Supreme Court in 1962, where he served for a long, long time. Byron Whizzer White lived to be 84 years of age, passing away in 2002. Moving on to 1939, Herb Adderley was born on this date. NFL Hall of Famer, played with the Packers and the Cowboys. We think of Charles Haley and now Tom Brady as five-time Super Bowl champs, right?
Yes.
Herb Adderley was a five-time NFL champion with the Green Bay Packers, and then, oh, by the way, also won three Super Bowls. Won the first two with the Pack and won another one with the Dallas Cowboys.
It's not bad.
Not bad at all. The 12th pick in the 1961 draft, a five-time Pro Bowler, four-time first-team All-Pro, defensive back and dangerous return man, Herb Adderley, 78 years old today, inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1980. Born in the state in 1970, former NFL cornerback Troy Vincent played with the Miami Dolphins, Philadelphia Eagles. He was the seventh overall pick in 1992, a five-time Pro Bowler in his own right. He was the head of the Players Association for a four-year period. Mm-hmm. And then he flipped and went to the dark side, and now he works for the league. He is currently the executive vice president of football operations for the National Football League. So apparently, I think Fortunato is chuckling at my characterization of the league as the dark side. But clearly, they are the empire in this Star Wars scenario here. Troy Vincent is 47 years old today. And happy 28th birthday to former Jaguar left tackle for only a season. We see you, Kelvin Beachum. How you enjoying that roster up there with the New York Jets right now? Ouch. Oh, my gosh. I guess he didn't have much of a choice. 28 years young today. Happy birthday to Kelvin Beachum.
Well, good news for him is he's one of the better players in the roster.
He may be the best, at least on that side of the ball. They don't have much going for him over on that side of the ball at this point in time. Bilal Powell probably tops the list, but defensively, they still have a handful of guys. This date in football presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, conveniently located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or you're in the market for a family dentist, the number to call, 620-9225. Visit jamesjmccall.com, and they'll give you a complete list of their comprehensive care services. That was this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
The Baltimore Ravens have released injured tight end Dennis Pettitte after he suffered a third major hip injury that is likely to end his football career during the team's OTAs last week. Free agent wide receiver Jeremy Maclin is expected to be in to visit with the Ravens today. A deal not getting done between Maclin and the Buffalo Bills. Apparently, Maclin are asking for more money than the Bills were willing to part with at this point. We'll see how his visit with Baltimore goes. The Detroit Free Press is reporting that retired wide receiver Calvin Johnson paid back the Lions $1 million of his signing bonus after he decided to retire. That number has been reported at $320,000 before, and the team could have sought to get back the full prorated portion of Megatron's signing bonus, which would have totaled $3.2 million, but are apparently content to just get $1 million back from their superstar. Johnson, for his part, has expressed some frustration, telling the Detroit Free Press last month that, quote, he didn't feel like he was treated the right way. I should have been treated on the way out. That's all. I mean, it's all good. I'm not tripping. I don't feel any kind of way. Just, hey, that's what they did.
Well, no way. He does feel some kind of way, obviously. You know, at my initial reaction to this is I'm a letter of the law guy. The NFL is well, or the team is well within the rights of Detroit Lions to recoup that money. He didn't earn it, right?
It's
prorated.
Are.
There certainly are. But I was talking to a writer up in Detroit a couple weeks ago, and he made the point that, you know, he felt differently as opposed to Barry Sanders. Barry Sanders basically quit the team in the eve of training camp and left them high and dry. Calvin Johnson, at least, you know, he's been a great citizen. Never hear a peep out of the guy. Never a hint of anything improper with him. All he's done is gone out and be, at times, the best receiver in the NFL during his tenure, and was a great Lion and all these things. And they, you know, is it worth the PR hit of $1 million and the bad feelings in the big scale? $1 million is a lot of money to you and me. In the NFL, in that scale, maybe it wasn't worth it. You know,
probably not
to go that route.
And Calvin's been a good enough player. Really, he's been, he and Stafford are what they've had. You know, and Calvin's a megastar. I mean, that's a guy who could potentially wind up in the Hall of Fame. You know, there's a lot that Calvin Johnson brought to the Lions, the all-time leading receiver in a single season in NFL history. Calvin Johnson, is there any reason to fight this kind of mudslinging campaign a little bit in the media with that guy?
Right.
Like, you're in your right to go get the money. You can do that if you want to, but is it really worth it to do it to Calvin Johnson.
It's one thing to do it with Golden Tate,
right?
You know, if it were to happen like that. I mean, I guess the precedent was set with Barry Sanders, and you could argue Calvin Johnson wasn't more valuable to that organization than Barry Sanders was. I think when you name the greatest line of all time, most people are going to think Barry, certainly in the modern era, in our era, growing up.
Yeah, no doubt about it. One more story here. Adrian Peterson says he's thinking about playing for 5 more years. Adrian, at 32 years old, says that he may play until he's 37. He's with the New Orleans Saints this year. The first time he'll be playing anywhere but Minnesota. He said, "I'd be lying to you to say it doesn't give you a chip on your shoulder talking about his age, especially being a competitor. It's not my main focus. It's something that drives you a little bit after 30 because it was the same back then. Oh, he's 30. Then I ended up leading the league in 2015. Same thing the next year. Stuff will continue to repeat itself until I finish." Again, says he wants to play 5 more years until he's 37. Certainly will be playing with the best offense that he's played with in his NFL career, switching over to the New Orleans Saints this season.
Yeah, and they have raved about Adrian Peterson. I mean, raved about it. Guys with the Saints who played against him in recent years and comparing him now, they you know, Teron Armstead, one of their top offensive linemen, said he thinks he is faster than he's ever seen him. I think it was, Cameron Jordan saying that he looks every bit as dangerous as he ever has. He's never seen a first step as quick as Adrian Peterson is displaying right now in OTAs. Now, granted,
AP's a freak.
He averaged 1.9 yards a carry last year, but that was on 37 carries, very limited. And when you're talking about, you go to Minnesota and take a look at that, they had just changed quarterbacks, right? Basically on the eve of the season or in training, you know, they just traded for Sam Bradford. What are you going to do early in the year? You're going to stack the box on Adrian Peterson. Okay, go ahead. Drew Brees, he's got Michael Thomas,
right?
Got Willie Snead.
It doesn't matter who he's got, he's Drew Brees. But he's got weapons on the outside.
He's got Ted Ginn.
Right.
He's got Kobe Fleener down the seam. He's got a lot going on. And, I told you I'm in all these MFL 10 leagues right now. You can get Adrian Peterson pretty late as a flyer. These are best ball leagues. I'm telling you, I'm addicted to them right now. Currently 17 drafts ongoing. And I really didn't time this well because I really don't want to be checking my phone constantly during vacation when I'm off next week, but it looks like at least half of my drafts will still be ongoing. I'm going to try to not add any new ones between now and Sunday when we leave for Gatlinburg, but I don't know if I'm going to be successful.
Right.
They're great format. Best ball, get your automatic best lineup. That's the kind of league to have Adrian Peterson in this year.
No doubt. And look, AP, this wouldn't be the first time he defied expectation.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's just kind of what he's done throughout his career, especially if you look at the story of the last 6 years or so of his NFL career. I mean, he rushed for almost 1,500 yards 2 years ago after the ACL. I mean, it's nuts what he's done, and I get it. It's another major knee injury with the meniscus in that knee, and it's a new team. And, look, I wouldn't be surprised if Adrian Peterson is a guy that, again, is rushing for something around 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns. Like, he's that type of guy. Anything he does at this point isn't going to surprise
you. You got to think they're going to feed him the ball in the opener. They play Minnesota.
I would,
Week one.
I'd say that's a safe bet.
And probably they get inside the five. Heck, they were taking Mark Ingram off the field last year for much lesser players than Adrian Peterson.
Yes, they were.
I'd almost rather wait 4 rounds or so and grab Adrian Peterson rather than spending a 5th-round pick on Mark Ingram, maybe a 6th-round pick if you're lucky right now in fantasy leagues. Yes, I know it's June. All right. Did I just mention I have 17 drafts ongoing right now, and I've got another 5 or so already completed? That's just how obsessed I am. All right. We will come back, and we'll talk about Rashad Greene and his place in the big picture for the Jacksonville Jaguars. He appeared on the Midday Chalk yesterday, and we'll bring you some of the sound bites that he generated during his conversation with Joe and T-Wig and Rick Ballew on 1010XL. So that is coming up. We're live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey and Fat Tony here with you. If you want to get in, 641-1010. We'll check the text line as well, driven by Duval Ford at the same number. Question of the day today, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, and hit us up on social media with this or on the phone lines for that matter, is put your GM cap on and tell us what is one move that the Jags did not make that you would have made this offseason. In other words, what did they miss out on doing? And also one move that they made that maybe if you were running the team, you would not have made. So one that they didn't do that you would have and one that they did do that you wouldn't have. I think that makes sense. And if you can figure that out, tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, or hit up the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL.
the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field. More Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we continue along here live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars on the practice field right now, and the prying eyes are out there, Tony, getting the scoops, getting the stories that only a 25-minute stretching and light throwing session can provide, or whatever they're doing out there today. That's what they're doing. Two more days of OTAs. Keep them healthy. That grass is wet. Be careful out there, fellas, at this point. For the next 2 days, just get through to next week unscathed and see if Brandon Albert shows up on Monday. And then
that's kind of the story.
It's kind of the story, right? And then we, you know, but it'll be nice.
It's not that nothing's happening. It's just that's kind of the story.
Get some pads on and do some things out there next week, mini camp. So we'll see how that all goes.
Is that a real practice?
I think it's more of a real practice, right? It's certainly what we're doing right now. I got to work on the Marone accent a little bit. Just kind of got that little bit like a low-key New York accent, I think, right?
Yeah.
It's not the used guys
kind of
over
like
the top.
That.
Just a little low-key New Yorker,
yeah.
I think. But I'll work on that one. He
more Syracuse than Brooklyn.
Exactly. Upstate. He's an upstate guy. I think pretty dismissive of calling it practice, and I think, you know, Ryan O'Halloran brought up this point yesterday. Clearly there's value to the OTAs, or they wouldn't do them. The league wouldn't negotiate to have these sessions. I can't imagine having, what do they have, about 10 practices in a three-week period. Call them what you will, practice, not practice. There's got to be some value to all that in terms of installing offense, working on the fundamentals. It's preparation for training camp as much as it is really training camp's preparation for the season. I get that it's not anything close to full padded practice, but it's what you got for right now. Rashad Green, one of those guys we mentioned, trying to make his mark and hold on to his spot on this football team, talked about his offseason at this point and finally feeling like he's 100% healthy.
Oh, it's going great. Most importantly, I'm healthy. You know, I feel like myself again. So that was key thing for me. This offseason, just getting back to that place where I was comfortable enough to play full speed and be 100%.
Yeah, he's dealt with injuries through the first couple of years of his career. It'll be interesting to see if he can stay healthy. Obviously missed a big portion of the beginning of his rookie year, came in late in the year, made an immediate impact in the return game, and that was one of the storylines we were talking about throughout the offseason last year, was they may have finally found a punt returner in Rashad Green, and then 2016 happened.
And there was that percentage of the audience, now granted they may have been heavily Garnet and Gold backers.
There's a little bit of that.
There was a chunk. Maybe not a big percentage, but there was definitely a percentage that thought Rashad Green would end up being the best receiver out of everyone they had. And this is with Allen Robinson already having a breakout season. I think the exuberance was in the irrational category. But again, all-time leading receiver at Florida State University, and they've been playing pro style for a long time, throwing the football all over the lot.
Sure.
So quite an accomplished guy, but it's the depth chart's, I mean, it's a good thing for the overall team, but it's pretty daunting right now.
Yes, it is. Rashad Green joining the boys on the Midday Chalk yesterday. Also talked about his new wide receivers coach, Keenan McCardell.
That's the thing that I love about Keenan, man. He just want me to go out there and do what I do best. And it just reminds me of those days that where I was at Florida State where, you know, Lawrence Dawson and Jimbo would just let me go out there and do me.
Not sure what that means. I guess, I play to his strengths, I suppose, you know.
Yes.
I mean, you got to play within the city. It's not like, hey, Rashad, just go out there and freelance. I don't think that's the impression he's trying to give. We're going to jump down to cut number six to tie in another comment here, Tyler, on Keenan McCardell. Rashad Green, as Tony pointed out on the Midday Chalk yesterday, talked about adapting to Keenan. Keep in mind, Jerry Sullivan, reputation of arguably being the best wide receiver coach of this era. And, you know, you work with one guy as good as Keenan was playing the game and as good as he may be coaching the game as well, you still have to adapt to a different style.
I've adapted to Keenan very well. I just see it as a blessing for myself, being able to be coached by him and all the other receivers. Just to be able to go out and just play the game how you know how to play it, and he gives you tips and pointers of what can help you instead of, you know, trying to change your whole game. You know, the thing about football and having all sorts of guys on the team is everyone brings their own type of game to the team. So you have to let a kid play how he's going to play and how he's been playing and how he's been productive.
Rashad Green speaking yesterday, getting back into some of the OTAs. And look, the most important question for this Jaguars team going into this offseason and coming into the 2017 season is obviously going to be the quarterback, Blake Bortles. Rashad was asked about the difference he sees in Blake this year.
It's OTAs, but for us, we're taking it very seriously because this is going to set the tone for us going into camp so we can hit the ground running and everybody will know, you know, how this thing is going to go. So I see great change in what Blake's trying to do just from a mental standpoint and a physical standpoint. You know, he's definitely locked in, and everyone else around him is locked in as well.
Rashad Green, we're aware there's competition for roster spots at wide receiver. How does he see that competition right now?
No one will be able to go ahead of me unless I allow that. So at the end of the day, it's, you know, we're all cool. We're all a great receiving group, and we all get along. But at the end of the day, everybody understands, you know, everybody's trying to make the team.
Yeah, to a degree. I can name you four that are going to be on the team. I'm pretty darn sure of, though, right? I mean, unless something shocking developed, and I can't even imagine, I don't even want to speculate what that would be, but Allen Robinson, Marquise Lee, Allen Hurns, and Dede Westbrook are on this football team
yes.
in 2017. And so
that's where the competition starts.
Right. That really,
as far as
it
for
is.
A roster
I agree with
spot,
you.
Yeah, we'll see how they want to arrange those guys. You may be able, if you're Rashad Green, to earn, you know, say the number four wide receiver spot. Like, that may still be potentially out there for him, but it doesn't mean that Dede Westbrook ain't going to be here.
No, I think, you know, he's a guy, much like Rashad, on a very inexpensive contract. You have him under team control longer now because you just drafted him. You get a couple more years on that. And, I mean, as good as Rashad Green was in college, he didn't win the Biletnikoff Award. He wasn't a Heisman finalist. Dede Westbrook was an explosive guy. I saw a chart, I think it was yesterday, that talked about yards per pass route run. So every time you're out there on the field and you're not blocking, mm-hmm. you're, let's say, you, I don't know how many times you do that a game, you run a pass route, but a bunch if you're a wide receiver, he's averaging over 4 yards per pass route run. That may not sound like a lot. That doesn't mean they're even throwing him the ball on those pass routes, right? He could be a decoy. And the average of when he runs a route, if you have him in your offense in college, he was second nationally. So not a statistic you hear about every day, but I thought an interesting one nonetheless.
Sure. Rashad Green also yesterday, again, joining the boys on the Midday Chalk. Last year at this time, Greg Olsen was the offensive coordinator. Nate Hackett took over midway through the year. Rashad was asked about the difference in the offense with Hackett running the show.
It's faster, much, much more faster. And we get a lot of plays accomplished on a basic OTA day. We may get from 60 to 70 plays, man, and that's not typical, you know, during OTAs. You know, usually the pace is a little slower. But, you know, I like it. You know, more plays, more balls, you know, more opportunities for guys to get their hands on the ball and just more chances to be able to win games.
We've talked a lot about the difference in culture change here to the point where I'm about tired of talking about it, but it's going to be a theme until we see it play out all throughout the course of the 2017 season. The change from, you know, the way Gus Bradley did things to the way Doug Marrone and Tom Coughlin are running the show, and Rashad was asked about that.
You have to understand where he's coming from a coach and what we're trying to do here at Jacksonville. You know, at the end of the day, one thing that I am in agreement to what him and Coughlin have going on is all about winning.
And finally, yesterday, Rashad Green asked, quite simply, what should we expect from you this year?
We'll definitely be hitting on all cylinders, making plays all across the board, special teams to big-time receiver making plays down the field, third down possessions to extend plays. You know, just pretty much the same Rashad Green that I was at Florida State, but better.
Let's hope so, because, you know, I'd love to see him make the team. Because I do, you know, we saw a glimpse of that explosive return ability. And even if he doesn't win the job outright, if they have the roster space and they're able to construct it and they feel he can give them enough, maybe in four wide receiver sets, like you said, Tony, that may be the best way for him to get on this team is to beat out a rookie, no matter how talented DeeDee Westbrook is, in terms of the pecking order at wide receiver. And then even if Westbrook is your primary return guy on punt returns, Rashad Greene may be your backup and have a role, as he said, on third downs. He's got to be more explosive in those opportunities. I mean, the average per catch, too many of those little dink and dunk balls to him. And he's a guy who had some pretty good speed, at least playing speed at Florida State, if not necessarily timed speed. So we'll see. Still got to win a spot on the roster, but, you know, I think where they've come and how excited people were when Rashad Greene got here. And look, I get it. You're excited about the entire 2013 draft class, probably when it happened, and it turned out to be a bust from top to bottom. So your excitement level does not necessarily predict how well these guys are going to play.
No.
But it could be one of those hidden gems on the roster, right? I mean, he certainly had a ton of potential at the highest level of college football, and he at least has flashed a little of that explosiveness here for the Jags.
Maybe in the punt return game, he certainly has.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
He's given him nothing as a wide receiver. We've talked about
it.
5.2 yards per catch. I would like to see Leonard Fournette average that per rush. You know, I mean, that's where that number is right now for Rashad Greene. And, you know, I don't know enough to say that, well, they're using him the wrong way. You know, I know he caught a lot of passes right around the line of scrimmage. That was when the bubble screen was in vogue. He didn't get in there after Nate Hackett basically took over as the play caller. So maybe it would have been a different looking Rashad Greene if he had been available for the last eight games of last season. But quite simply, he wasn't. He was hurt. We'll see if he can earn himself a roster spot this year, what kind of impact he can make.
All right, Tyler directed me to this story Andy Benoit wrote for the Monday Morning Quarterback. I think it was posted yesterday. You can find it online via SI.com. And it is about backup quarterbacks that he thinks are better than Colin Kaepernick. Obviously, Colin Kaepernick continues to be a storyline out there. And he said, in his opinion, there are 15 backup quarterbacks better than Kaepernick, not including the rookie class. So take all the rookies out who may or may not turn out to be better than Kaepernick.
Okay.
He said, in no particular order, here is his list of backups better than Kaepernick. Let's weigh in if we agree or not. Okay. Would you rather have Jimmy Garoppolo or Kaepernick?
Garoppolo.
So would I. Would you rather have Matt Moore or Kaepernick?
Probably more.
Right, just in
that's
terms
close,
of...
That's close, though.
Right, a little bit more consistent in a pro-style offense. He's considered one of the better backup quarterbacks in the National Football League. I think that's close as well, right?
Yeah.
Depends on what kind of offense you run. Colt McCoy in Washington. Colt McCoy's actually
Kaepernick.
Played very well.
I'd still rather have Kaepernick.
Boy, I tell you, I did. I think it might come down to the system. McCoy's been very accurate, and at the times he's had to play in the last several years, but certainly the upside, I think, athletically in spades for Kaepernick, although McCoy's a very good athlete. I'll give that one a push. A.J. McCarron versus Kaepernick.
I don't know enough about A.J.
Right.
McCarron. I'd probably lean McCarron, but it's just a very, very slight lean.
I just wonder if this list is because that Benoit thinks Kaepernick would have difficulty adjusting to a lot of systems, that you'd have to really tailor something. Like you thought in Seattle, where you've got a very mobile quarterback, if Russell Wilson went down and they had Kaepernick, you wouldn't have to change a ton to what they do offensively.
Right.
So again, the list, not necessarily in any particular order. Next guy on his list is Chad Henne.
No, Kaepernick.
I mean, right? You know, again, no offense to Chad Henne, who's a better quarterback than I could ever dream of being. But, and I don't think that he may be in the top half of backup quarterbacks in the National Football League.
He was, what, like eighth on that list we were looking at?
Right, in terms of just the pure backups. But what is the upside to that? You know, I don't see it with Henne. I think your best-case scenario with Henne is he runs the team for a couple weeks when your starter's
sure.
out, and he keeps the, you know, keeps a steady hand on the tiller. Geno Smith. Better than Kaepernick. I mean, Geno Smith's good games are very good. His bad games are horrendous. So bad.
What are Geno Smith's career numbers? Let me look this up real quick.
Look at his last game from 2015. I think he threw for like 330 with no picks. He's had some excellent individual games. He didn't play at all last year because he was hurt. I would have, you know, if the Jets, of course, they're not trying to compete this year, they would have been better off bringing him back than the slot that they have in there right now. I take Geno Smith over Hackenberg or Bryce Petty Maybe not over Josh McCown. That's not saying much.
Yeah, his
for
last game in 2014, he was 20-25, 358, and three touchdowns.
That's, no picks, right?
Yeah, that's an incredible game. If you look at Colin Kaepernick in his career, and I don't think a lot of people would guess this. Colin Kaepernick in his career is basically a 60% passer who has thrown 72 touchdowns and 30 interceptions.
That's excellent.
That's excellent. You look at Geno Smith. He's a 58% passer who's thrown 28 touchdowns and 36 interceptions.
That's not excellent.
That's not excellent.
No.
Like, I don't know what people aren't seeing with Kaepernick.
I don't either.
It's weird.
The rest of the list, Drew Stanton of the Cardinals.
Come on.
Brock Osweiler / Cody Kessler, whoever you want to consider the backup, whoever ends up being the backup, taking DeShone Kizer out of the picture because he's not ranking rookies here.
Nope.
Cody Kessler's better than Kaepernick?
That's nuts.
Really? I mean, Osweiler last year was horrendous. Chase Daniel, this is a guy that the NFL insiders are trying to make happen as a thing. I mean, people, Chase Daniel, this will be the year. He signed the big deal with Philadelphia, and then he had third on the depth chart, and then
yeah,
they traded Sam Brad. You know,
they loved him so much when they signed him in Philly that they made the move to go get a quarterback.
Right. So, is he better? How have we seen enough to know if he's better?
I know Andy Reid really likes him. Does that make him a good quarterback?
Maybe. Andy Reid's a pretty good evaluator. Derek Anderson? At this stage, Derek Anderson's better than Kaepernick?
That's nuts.
How did he do in his one start last year, Tony?
Not
one
well.
For one in terms of pick sixes. Right, one pass, first play of the game. Cam was suspended for a series.
Yes.
Nick Foles?
No.
Is this the Andy Reid aura rubbing off on Nick Foles? Ryan Mallett is better than Kaepernick? What has Mallett ever done?
Nothing.
At all?
Nothing.
Matt Barkley. Before last year, Matt Barkley couldn't crack an egg. He had a decent few games last year. I mean, pretty good, but come on. He's backing up Brian Hoyer, for goodness sakes. It's not like Brian Hoyer, who prior to last year was best known for a 6-turnover game in the playoffs. And then you got Landry Jones with the Steelers. He's okay. I mean, whatever. And Matt Cassel with the Titans. All these guys, there are a few of them that say absolutely. I mean, Garoppolo, top of the list.
Sure, you can see it a little bit with some of them. But like Landry, all right, if Colin Kaepernick had been handed the keys to the Pittsburgh offense.
Sure, and had gotten a chance to spend an entire offseason learning it, right?
Right, with Antonio and Le'Veon and those guys. Are you kidding me? Compared to what Landry did with it? That's crazy. To think that Landry's a better player than Colin
Kaepernick. I don't know where that's all coming from. I think, you know, Matt Moore, Jimmy Garoppolo, there are a couple.
Some of it
probably,
is reasonable.
There
yeah.
probably maybe four or five of these guys that you say. You could make the argument in certain kinds of offenses. You lost me at Henny. You really lost me at Osweiler and Cody Kessler and several of these others. So, anyway, if you want to, we just gave you the list, but if you want to read deeper into it, go to SI.com. Andy Benoit's article on that. He also tweeted out a link to that on his confirmed Twitter account. We will go to confirmed Twitter accounts next and see what kind of feedback we got asking you to put on your GM hat for this offseason. You'll look back. Knowing how the offseason played out, what's the one move you would have made for the Jags and the one move that you would have taken back for Jacksonville specifically? Give us your thoughts if you haven't already at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony. We'll also check the Jaguars Today Facebook page when we return in the moment live at Everbank on 1010XL.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Hey, we got the live feed going on at the bridge out there. Is that the Hart Bridge here, Tony?
Yes.
I think it is, right? It looks pretty sloppy outside. Is that an accurate depiction, you think, of what's going on?
That would be, yes.
It looks.
These are the days where it's really dangerous on the road.
Right, because it's like you're just driving through, I don't know, like a glass of water or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's not raining hard, but it's just.
It's enough to make the road slick.
Yes. There's not a lot of space between the raindrops today, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Kind of like a fog. Anyway, JSO has tweeted out, Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, that due to a vehicle fire, the Matthews Bridge is currently closed in both directions until further notice. Seek an alternate route or route, depending on how you want to pronounce that word. Either one is apparently acceptable. So there you have it. Don't use the Matthews Bridge. Or if you try to, you're not going to be allowed to. All right?
Yes.
Take a different direction. I'm going to go over the Hart Bridge when we depart here and head over to 1010XL World Headquarters today. I asked you this earlier, not that it's critical. Some people it might be. My friend Javon, who I worked with at Sirius back in the day, tweeted out the question this morning, Thriller versus the Purple Rain soundtrack. You said you're never really that big into Prince at the time.
No, like Prince has never done all that much for me. Like, I get it. I understand why people love Prince as much as they do, but it never hit me that way. So for me, it's Thriller pretty easily.
It's a great album, and it was closer than I thought, but then Thriller won it for me. I had to look at the playlist on both of them. I did. Yeah, and you know what? Thriller, this song is at best, I think, like the seventh best song on that album.
It's
at
a really
best,
good album.
It's a great album. Human Nature. Love Human Nature. Love PYT. You know, deeper cuts off Thriller. All right, there you go. For all the kids out there, those are albums in the decade called the 1980s that came out. We reference it quite frequently here on the program.
I think even kids today are probably aware of the Thriller album.
You would think so.
I'm guessing.
Does it get sampled a lot? I have no idea.
I don't know if it gets sampled a lot, but it's still like an album that sells very well. Like Thriller still sells.
Dark Side of the Moon.
Very well.
You know,
Dark Side of the Moon,
you know, there's like a handful that Physical Graffiti.
One and two.
Right, Dark Side of the Moon. We did this last year, I think, looking at the all-time album sales. Dark Side of the Moon, very strong. On the text line, let me just clear up a few on the text line here. We were asking you today, moves in hindsight for the Jaguars that you would have made, a move that you would have made that they didn't, and a move that they made that you didn't like so much that maybe you would not have made. JD on the text line said he didn't like the Albert move. I wonder if you don't like the Albert move only because of the way it's turned out. Because if you go back, would you? I guess with the benefit of hindsight, if Albert were in and he were, you know, gung-ho to be here, and you got him for a seventh-round pick, I don't know why you wouldn't want that move.
Right. There's no reason not to like it in that circumstance.
Right.
You could, you know, say that you don't like the move to let go of Beecham. You know, and that's essentially...
But if you didn't let go of him, you got a four-year, $40 million deal. That was your option.
It
was
I
one
get
or the
it,
other.
And I'd be all right with that.
Personally. We thought there was no way they were going to let him go,
yeah.
Right? Because left tackle's hard to come by. If
that puts you into the Albert quagmire. And maybe it's, look, we don't know what was said or not said when they made the trade for Brandon Albert.
In terms of renegotiating a deal.
Yeah. We don't know if Albert said, hey, I want my deal to be renegotiated. And they say, maybe we'll talk about this later. Or if they said nothing about it. It was just like, hey, we traded for you. Hooray. And he showed up in Jacksonville for a day, stood there with his jersey, met the media, did all that stuff. And then, you know, 3 weeks later, we get the story that Brandon Albert doesn't want to show up for the OTAs because he wants to have his deal renegotiated. Well, where did that come from? You know, it's we don't know the behind the scenes of what happened with that. I know talking to the people that I have in this building, it seemed to catch them off guard that Brandon Albert was asking for what he was asking for. So my guess is that negotiation never happened.
Look, if Brandon Albert comes in for minicamp, even if he misses minicamp and he's here for training camp, and you have him for the cost of a seventh-round pick, I think people will change their mind about that. But for right now, okay, a lot of people have mentioned that. And he also said, I want Nick Mangold as the move that they didn't make that I'd like to make. You could still have him.
You could still.
He's still out
there,
which makes me believe that the film is not good for Nick Mangold at this point, you know, for the last year plus or whatever you're looking at. Because you're talking about a guy, multi-time Pro Bowler at center. If you're willing to play Brandon Linder at guard, why wouldn't you at least consider that? And my guess is they have considered it. My guess is they did their due diligence on Nick Mangold because they do have the cap space and there isn't a great demand out there. And, you know, doesn't look like that moves in the offing.
No, I looked at Pro Football Focus. I know they had Linder at 5 among centers last year as far as the grade they gave him. And again,
that's pretty good.
I don't know what goes into offensive line grades and how they can tell what they can tell. But I know they had Nick Mangold at like 26. Last year in those grades, and there was a big difference. It's like a 25-point difference between the two guys.
Yeah, so, you know, granted, you're not signing the guy Nick Mangold was 5 years ago, if you go that direction. But
no.
As I tweeted out when I heard that Linder was, you know, being played at guard and they may end up playing him there, at least kick the tires on him. And that doesn't mean necessarily bringing him in, but do a good film study, really evaluate. And I'm sure they have. I assume they have at this point. Another one on the text line, what move would I have made? Gone after Zeitler harder. There wasn't a free agent quarterback that I feel would have made the team better, would have considered coming to Jacksonville, regardless of how much money we threw at them. And it would have added heavier competition to an offensive line that needs to be at their best to give Blake and Fournette their best chance to succeed. Plus, the added bonus of eliminating the uncertainty of who will be playing center, that Linder is taking more reps at guard. Someone said, bring Freeney in for 15 snaps, question mark. I don't know if they were suggesting.
It was when we were talking about it.
Right, but I don't know if they were suggesting that or they were questioning, why would you bring a guy in for 15 snaps? Well, I think it's more the former. Freeney, if he goes anywhere, is probably back to Atlanta. That's been the rumor. He went there last year, almost won a Super Bowl with him. And
if you're Freeney, why would you sign until after OTAs and all that stuff?
Right, why sign on the eve of training camp at that. And they do give him some credit for helping to develop and bring Vic Beasley along. Several on the text line as well wanted Dan Feeney in the third round instead of Dwan Smoot. And this one, finally, the lack of respect for Hearns is mind-blowing. Based off the theory y'all are presenting, Jarvis Jones would be more valuable than James Harrison simply because of draft position. Through injuries and drops, Hearns has outproduced Lee by a mile, yet he has the possibility of being released even with earning a new deal before Lee, according to y'all's opinion. Yeah, we're talking about a year down the road. We're not talking about going into the season. If they decide they can't pay all three, there's a reason Lee was a second-round pick, a high second-round pick, and Hearns went undrafted. He can do things athletically that Allen Hearns can't do. Granted, up until this point, Allen Hearns has outproduced Marquise Lee. But Marquise Lee, when healthy, like he was last year, was the best receiver on the field for the team last season. So, you know, we're not saying where things stand now that he has earned that designation over Hearns, but we're projecting, speculating into the future. So, yeah, I mean, if that's a lack of respect for Hearns, it's just a financial reality. If you decide, are you going to cut Allen Robinson, do you think? Or I think you'd rather have him. And I think Marquise Lee brings you a dimension of speed and quickness that Allen Hearns doesn't have. He has been a very reliable guy. I love Allen Hearns. He's a true pro. But if it comes down to which two of the three you would want to keep for the long term, I think the first two, Robinson and Lee, have more rare qualities.
I do too. And I think, look, we don't know what Dede Westbrook's going to bring yet. And if they feel like Dede is a more direct replacement for, say, Marquise Lee does struggle to stay healthy, then it does make sense to keep Hearns because he is a reliable guy when he's healthy enough to play. But Hearns has had his injury issues as well. He has been a super tough guy. Like, if Hearns is going to miss time, it's because he has to. You know, we watched him play after that concussion. We all know what they're going to get in Allen Hearns, which is a very steady producer when he's available. The question is, what is the upside with a guy like Marquise Lee? And if he could stack it up in back-to-back years, odds are the Jags are going to reward him for that.
Give us a quick peek on the Twitter feedback, if you would.
Here's what we got from Duwal Doom. This is actually kind of easy for me. One, I'd have signed the best available guard. And two, I would have kept Julius Thomas. From Jag Fan, would have signed Whitworth out of Cincinnati. Take back the trade for Albert. Had it with guys that don't want to be here. From UCF Jag, Dorian Johnson at guard over Dede Westbrook. We have questionable top-end talent on the offensive line. He could have competed for a starter spot. And from EI, we got paid Zeitler, whatever he wanted. Take back move, Foo Titans to Albert.
All right, Doom also asked in regards to the Andy Benoit column we read. He said, you believe it's possible Benoit was influenced to write this? He says, so playing devil's advocate, in the past, many people have claimed the Monday Morning Quarterback founder is the league's mouthpiece, that being Peter King.
Yeah.
Do you believe it's possible Benoit, who works for him at Monday Morning Quarterback, was influenced to write this, and is there a specific effort to keep Kaepernick out? Honestly, I'm trying not to think conspiratorially about this, but that list was such garbage, in my opinion, that it almost was like, why are you putting this out there now? It's like, it would be like, you know, a team putting this out to justify the move that they made or didn't make. It really seemed very,
it was odd,
very
in
partisan.
That, like, some of the jobs that he was listing there, if Colin Kaepernick had been signed just as a free agent without all this other stuff, if Colin Kaepernick had been signed in a handful of those places in, you know, March when free agency opened, he'd be the starter in some of the spots that he was talking about there. It was insane that he's listening. He's not as good as the backup in these spots where if he didn't have the whole on-field, the off-field stuff that we're dealing with Colin Kaepernick, if he had just signed as a free agent in March everyone would be assuming he's the starter in this spot. Now he's not better than the backup there. Give me a break.
Give me a break. Break me off a piece. All right. It's going to do it. I got one more show to go. Then I got vacation,
yes, you do.
Baby.
So we're going to see what kind of senioritis you got.
We're going to grind on the final day of OTAs tomorrow. No question. We'll dig deeper than we ever have before on Jaguar football, and we'll put together the winning game plan for 2017. 14-2, baby. Accept nothing less from your Jacksonville Jaguars. Thanks to John Osier for stopping by, the senior writer from Jaguars.com. Likewise, Hayes Carline, our own 1010XL, a marathon man today, did the drill. He'll be back this afternoon with the crew on the Franchi Show at 3 o'clock. And, of course, you can read him at gridironnow.com. And glad we could bring you some of the Midday Chalks conversation with Rashad Green from yesterday as well. That'll do it for us. For Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony, I am Mike Dempsey signing off. Thanks for listening once again to Jaguars Today right here on 1010XL. Hey, folks, Father's Day is going to sneak up on you. If you're not prepared, you got to take care of dad, okay? We don't ask for much as dads. We're pretty laid back. But you know what? Father's Day, it's nice to feel special. And every dad needs to shave. You always think, what can I get my dad? Well, every dad needs razors, and he's probably dealing with some inferior product right now or paying too much for him if he's not using Harry's razors. I'm telling you, the best blades, the closest shave I've ever had is with a Harry's razor, and I get them for about half the price of the so-called leading brands. And they're delivered right to my front door. You can save $5 at checkout if you use coupon code Dempsey right now off any set. They've got a limited edition Father's Day set that includes a matte black razor handle, a chrome razor stand, Harry's moisturizing foaming shave gel, three of their handcrafted blade cartridges, and a travel cover. It all comes in a sleek, giftable box. Very nice, with the option to custom engrave it, and a personalized card can be included at no cost to you. How do you get this deal? You go to Harrys.com right now, redeem a special offer for listeners of this show. Harry's will give you $5 off your purchase with promo code Dempsey. Don't wait. That's Harrys.com. Harrys.com. Enter code Dempsey at checkout and save $5.
You guys have a good day. Peace.